Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss, plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Humans Excess Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week we'll be celebrating the spirit of Manchester by speaking to someone who's helped shape the city. This week I'm joined by Graham Park, legendary Hacienda name and pioneering DJ. You'll hear Graham describing the buzz of the Hacienda.
Go up there, go in the front door, in the door, through those kind of plastic things.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what the hell? And it was bedlam.
You'll also talk about how much Manchester means to him and how he's often thought of as an honorary Manc despite his Scottish roots.
I'm a proud Scot, but I was proud to be part of this city. And I like to think that when I've travelled around the world, I'm kind of representing this city.
Gives a great pleasure to welcome to the studio a man that I've got to know pretty well over the years. And it's fair to say we've shared many a DJ booth together, usually when I've been warming up for him. Mr. Graham Park, how are you?
Clint, how are you?
Superstar DJ.
Thank you for having me. No, that's all nonsense.
No, I'm going to do that because you were one of the first of that genre that we call Superstar DJ. You were like, right, you were one of the first ones that was getting flown about by helicopters and all that and daft money. Those days are behind you now, aren't they?
Hang on, can I just say that this helicopter myth, people keep bringing up, there was never a helicopter. The only time I've been in a helicopter was on my honeymoon in the Rocky Mountains of Canada.
Right.
And that wasn't gig-wise.
And you got your chopper out there, did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Many times.
What about the fees? Like back in the late 80s when all this Superstar DJ thing happened, people were talking about like 20 grand an hour, you know, people like Oakenfold and Weatherall would be literally doing three of those in a night.
Yeah, I mean, fees were a bit crazy late 80s and early 90s, and I've never got 20 grand for a gig, I have to say. And then up towards the mid to late 90s, it all just went crazy. But I'm glad to say that things have kind of gone back to normal, really. And I mean, I do all right. I think my fees are nothing like it was in the 90s, but I think it's a good value for money, put it that way.
Yeah.
But yes, there are the Guettas and the Harrises.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the Americans do still command ridiculous money.
Paul Van Dyk.
But they're not necessarily the best DJs.
They're not Graham Park, are they?
There's only one Graham Park. There's a mansion in Pennsylvania. If you Google Graham Park, Pennsylvania, there's a mansion, a historic mansion in Pennsylvania called Graham Park.
Oh, amazing.
And Yeah.
So is it spelled the same way?
Spelled the same way, and it was built by a Scotsman from Aberdeen, and I'm right. A Scotsman from Aberdeen, in 17-something. So
there might be a link. I found on the internet the other day, I stumbled across Clint Boone Car Garage in New Zealand.
Brilliant.
Spelled the same way as me.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more about your DJing in a bit. We're going to talk about your latest project, Embrace the New, which is a great documentary thing that you're working on. We'll talk about the Hacienda Classical, which is phenomenal. That's something you've put together in recent years. But let's start at the beginning, because this is all about the spirit of Mancunians and Manchester, the city. You're obviously not from here. You're originally from Aberdeen, aren't you?
I am from Aberdeen. I left when I was very little, and I grew up in Fife, which is a little county just over the Forth from Edinburgh. But then moved to the East Midlands in the early 80s when my dad got a job and played in bands, which I did. I've always done. I play saxophone and do a bit of, well, you know when you know one instrument, you can always do bits of others. So I used to play in bands, saxophone, bit of guitar, keyboard, and lead vocals, which is, we'll come to why that's relevant later. Got a job in a record shop in Nottingham, Selected Disc, and the guy who bought the record shop bought a nightclub. He didn't ask me, he told me, because of the music I played in the shop, he wanted to be his DJ. I reluctantly agreed, and very quickly after that realised that, one, I absolutely loved being a DJ, and two, I was quite good at it. So I gave up playing in the bands, which didn't go down well with the bands, one of the bands, because we were having a couple of record companies sniffing around us, you know, and we did some support slots for the Blow Monkeys. So I was not very popular when I said I'm giving it up to be a DJ, mainly because you got to play for 4 hours. You got to play music that I loved and everyone else seemed to love it. It was a real eclectic mix of stuff. But the £25 you got at the end of the night, I didn't have to split it with 4 other people and the drummer's girlfriend for doing the guest list. And I didn't have to bother about setting up PAs or hiring a van or lugging equipment about. I thought, I'll give this a go for a while. Well, that was 1984. What, 34, 35 years ago.
And what records were you playing? Because this is before The House and the club stuff that became.
Early 80s, so lots of 12-inch dance. You know, everyone used to have a 12-inch dance mix, right? So obviously things like New Order, things like, I remember Everything's Gone Green, 12-inch version by New Order was a massive tune. And things like Confusion by New Order. And then, of course, Blow Monkeys 12-inches, Human League, ABC, Talking Heads, but mixed in with that, a bit of Motown, a bit of Stax. And then, obviously, I've always collected disco, so like things like Sister Sledge, Chic, Donna Summer, but some more kind of obscure disco. And then, early 80s, the hip-hop electro thing, Afrika Bambaataa, Johnson Crew, you know, Planet Rock, all that came along.
Yeah.
Then that kind of morphed into Big Daddy Kane, Roxanne Shanté, and all the early proper hip-hop that sampled James Brown.
And a lot of these are names that ultimately you became friends with these people, didn't you? People like Arthur Baker and New Order.
But then in 1985, that's when the first house records, but they weren't called house records. I vividly remember, in fact, there was a record called Music is the Key by J.M. Silk, which was Keith Nanali, who was like a soul vocalist, and Steve Silk Hurley, who went on to have fame for Jack Your Body. And this was my first ever house record. I thought, what's this? This looks strange. Put it on. Oh my God. And that was closely followed by records by Juan Atkins from Detroit, Chippy from Chicago. And that eventually became house music.
Yeah.
And as we all know, it kind of took over. And then summer 88, I get asked. I met Mike Pickering in 87 at an ID photo shoot. We got to know each other. I was familiar with his work with T-Coy and Quando Quango. And I knew I'd been to Hacienda to see bands, but never for a club night. And then he called me in 88, said, I'm off on holiday for 3 weeks. Do you want to cover? I'd love to.
At the Hacienda.
And I had no idea what... I'd been to the Hacienda with lots of men in fringes and buttoned up raincoats, you know.
Yeah.
The indie kids. I'd been to see Crispy Ambulance there. I'd been to see Durruti Column. I'd been to see New Order and Orange Juice, Joseph K, Aztec Camera, all those bands. I used to get the train up from Nottingham and just kill time till 6 a.m. and get the first train back. Never been to a club night. So I go, Mike says, you've got to come up before you cover for me because it's changed a bit since you were last here.
Yeah.
Go up there, go in the front door, in the door through those kind of plastic things.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what the hell? And it was bedlam. And of course, everything fell into place. I realised why it was Bedlam.
Yeah, why is everybody happy and all that?
Exactly. And then did the three Fridays on my own. I remember those three Fridays probably better than any nights ever. Mike came back, gives me a call. I heard it went great. Do you want to come and do it with me every week? Oh my God, yes. And then that was me doing the Hacienda. And then that led to me going on Kiss FM when it launched. And then...
Because that was based in Manchester as well, wasn't it?
That was based in Manchester, my introduction to radio, Sunday afternoons, which was a bit weird after staying up all night after Hacienda on a Saturday.
Yeah. And apart from those primal moments in the Hacienda, primal's the word I always use to describe what it was like. Apart from that, how did you adapt to life in Manchester back then? Did you feel at home here?
Yeah, always. I mean, obviously I'm from Aberdeen, but, you know, when I started at Hacienda... pre-internet days, pre-social media days, people just assumed I was a Manc. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. I'm a proud Scot, but I was proud to be part of this city. And people who are proper, true, 100% born and bred Mancs have often said that I'm an honorary Manc, which is quite an honor, I think.
Yeah.
But it used to be funny traveling around the world or traveling around the country and you'd get met at the train station or the airport or picked up from your hotel and like, oh, you don't sound like you're from Manchester. Well, I'm not actually. I'm from Aberdeen. But that's fine. But the funniest thing is when, obviously, at Hacienda, the club that New Order, Tony Wilson, Rob Gretton, Alan Rasmus, Factory Records were involved in, that's kind of kudos you can't buy. So I used to get a lot of new gigs. And there's a club in Aberdeen called Fever that contacted me via fax. Turn up at Hacienda.
There's
a fax for you, Parky. Can you call this number? We're a club in Aberdeen. We want to book you. So I replied by fax. We did it all by fax. So I flew up to Aberdeen and got met at the airport. And the guy, who's now one of my best friends, fellow Aberdeen supporter, one of my best friends, and he met me at the airport. And he goes, oh, my God, you sound Scottish. I went, I am Scottish. I'm actually from Aberdeen. He's like, oh, my God. People are going to freak out when they find out that you're one of us. I went, what are they going to do when I take my jacket off? And I undid my jacket, Aberdeen's current home strip on, right?
Yeah.
He said, oh my God. And they did. They was like, everyone was like kind of on that kind of club, that rave level.
Yeah.
Took my jacket off, got a big announcement on the mic. Everyone went mental. That was then. That was my new monthly Sunday night residency in my home city, which was quite good. But yeah, Manchester's been great to me. And I like to think that when I've travelled around the world, I'm kind of representing this city.
You're still synonymous with the city, the way I see it. It's like everybody knows you're Scottish, but you are part of the furniture.
It's a couple of times it's backfired. I remember in 1989, I could not believe my luck when Peter Hook asked me to go on tour with New Order. And going back to an earlier conversation when I was playing New Order records, and I went to see New Order when they played in Nottingham. Next thing, I'm friends with them because they own the Hacienda. Peter Hook said, right, you're taking 6 weeks off the Hass. Michael will be fine on his own. You're coming with us. We're doing our North American tour. 1989, if you look online, it was the last tour New Order did in North America.
Right.
Well, certainly with Hookie anyway. And there I was flying round the US with New Order, DJing on the lineup with Public Image Limited and the Sugar Cubes featuring Bjork, right? And playing house music on stage before New Order. And when we were in San Francisco, somebody gets in touch at the hotel. I was at the Hollywood Holiday Inn. In fact, I met George Clinton in the Hollywood Holiday Inn. That's another story for another time.
Did he mention me?
No, he didn't.
No.
Sorry. But get a message at the hotel. This guy, he owns a clothes shop / record shop on Haight and Asprey. And he's from Manchester. It would be his honour if I would come and DJ in his shop. And he made some flyers out and everything. I went, I'd love to. Got a taxi down there and bag of records, turn up. He's like, oh, I can't believe you're here. And after a few minutes of conversation, he went, hang on a minute, you don't sound like you're from Manchester. I'm like, well, I'm not. I mean, I'm from Aberdeen originally. And he's like, head in his hands, like, no, no. Oh, I'm really sorry, mate. You can't DJ in my club, in my shop. You're not a Manc. I'm like, what difference is it, mate? No, I'm sorry, man. No, you can't. And he wouldn't let me DJ.
Wow.
That's incredible. The one time it backfired, yeah.
That's incredible, isn't it? How did you feel when the Hacienda came to its sticky end after the drug deaths, the shootings, the closures, then the demolition eventually? How did that affect you?
Well, it was sad, but you know what? I think it was time to kind of move on. I'd stop doing it every week because, like, all good things have to come to an end. And Hacienda, unlike most big super clubs, it was never meant to be a super club. It happened organically. It was a shambles behind the scenes. And then, like any organic thing, it kind of reached a natural conclusion and died. So I wasn't that bothered because I'd already stopped doing weekly Saturdays towards the end. I was doing monthly Saturdays. So it was sad. People were like absolutely mortified, but I thought, okay, that's it. That chapter closed. Mm. Time to move on, because I was already doing lots of lucrative work elsewhere, and I thought, oh, that's it. It's had its moment. But then, of course, around early 2000s, about 4 or 5 years after it closed, all these kind of unofficial Hacienda reunion nights or Hacienda classics nights started appearing in and around Manchester, and of course, Peter Hook, who owns the Hacienda brand, was not happy about this, understandably. And then it was Oliver Wilson, the late great Tony Wilson's son, who said to Hookie, we should do a Hacienda, proper Hacienda night with your blessing. So we did it, and it was incredible. And that led to doing the odd official one. And then it kind of, about 5 years ago, we did the 30th birthday party in the car park underneath the Hacienda apartment. Yeah.
So the same space that was the Gay Traitor bar and the
absolutely,
basement.
Absolutely.
That's where you did the reunion. Well,
and that was an incredible night to see people you hadn't seen for 10 years, for 15 years, queuing up on Whitworth Street West, City Road. All right, okay. As you're getting out of your taxi, and that kind of buzz in the air. Because one thing I miss, people ask me what I miss most about Hacienda. When you used to walk up to the front door on a Friday night between 88 and 92, and there was this real buzz on that junction, real buzz in the air, real atmosphere, and people getting out of taxis and people shouting to their mates in the queue and trying to jump in the queues. Oh, it's me, mate, I'm joining the queue here. And people shouting, hey, Parker, that was just electric. And you knew from the moment you were waiting to get outside, the anticipation of what was about to happen inside. And the thing is, people did what they don't do now. As soon as the doors opened at 9, people would just rush in.
Yeah.
And it was straight on the dance floor. And from 9:30 till 2, from 88 to 92, it was just 100 miles an hour, full on amazing. I do miss that because now there's more choice for people. There's more DJs. Things are a lot more defined. So if you want a specific type of dance music or a specific type of indie music or whatever, there's a DJ in a club to cater for that very niche market.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and admittedly, what Mike Pickering and I did was very house orientated. We did like to throw in the odd random thing. I mean, like after Mike left and did M People and I moved to Saturdays and stayed, I used to love dropping random tunes. But people remember those nights. Vernon Kay is for always saying on his various radio shows, I remember the night Parky played Prince Raspberry Beret. and people do. Or the night I played Ghost Town by The Specials. People come up to me and go, do you remember the night you played The Specials, Ghost Town? And that's why I did that, because I thought, I wonder if people will remember. Rather than that whole period being a blur, by dropping weird records, like Carly Simon's Why was one of them.
Yeah.
Or it's things like that were a bit different, and then before going back to the 125 BPM, and they were great special times.
Yeah, good moments. And recently, you've sort of resurrected the Hacienda spirit through very successful, the phenomena, which is Hacienda Classical. And I've seen it a few times. I can honestly say, I've said this publicly as well, that it's one of the most euphoric live experiences I've ever witnessed at a music event, the Hacienda Classical. Tell us how that came about, because you were instrumental in its creation. Well, you still are with it, aren't you?
First of all, thank you for those comments, because like, I really appreciate that. We'd all appreciate those comments, because a lot of hard work goes into it. How it came about was, as the Hacienda Club brand began to pick up and become a big thing again, a lot of younger clubbers who were too young to go to Hacienda, some of whom weren't even born, were like, oh, this new Hacienda, our parents have told us about the Hacienda, and it's the original DJs, Park and Pickering, so they come along. But the thing is, a young clubber, they don't come with that baggage that an older clubber has. They just want to hear great music. They don't care if it's...
It's got to be contemporary, hasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So Mike and I, as DJs who still work regularly, it's great because you get to play newer stuff. But of course, your older clubber, who used to go to Hacienda, they're like, oh, come on, Parky, when are you going to get the proper classics on? And you're like, oh. You're in the minority here. I'm really sorry. But and then, or you would, Mike and I love dropping the forgotten classics, like all the old Strictly Rhythm tracks that got forgotten about, or the Nervous tracks or whatever, or the obscure Chicago and Detroit techno tracks. And it's annoying when someone who's old enough to have been at Hacienda and claims they were a Hacienda regular don't recognise these old tracks. That really annoys me. Mm. So Mike and I one night said, what can we do? We don't want to alienate our original followers. We need something new. And after many a beer, 4 a.m. in a hotel bar, we said as a joke, we should do a classical thing as a joke. And then two musicians came down for breakfast with their instruments. We thought, yeah, there's that classical thing. Maybe we should do it.
Serendipity, isn't it?
Had to sell the idea to Hookie, who reluctantly agreed to try it as a one-off. And that one-off at the Bridgewater Hall, which was a shambles, ended up the following week being much better.
Yeah.
Then it was Royal Albert Hall, and then it was a whole tour.
Yeah.
Then 2017, bigger and better tour. And this year, an even bigger and better tour. Mm. And to go back to what we said earlier, before as a DJ, I sang in a band by, to cut a long story short, because I had to cover for Peter Hook when he couldn't turn up to a show, I somehow ended up singing Blue Monday, gladly.
Oh, yeah, in the classical, yeah.
Hookie said, right, if I'm not there, you're doing Blue Monday. So this year, Hookie was like, you need your own song. So as well as doing Blue Monday occasionally, I did our version of Rock the Casbah to sing. Because Rock the Casbah, I chose that because we used to play that Hacienda because the 12-inch dub mix of that, but it's mainly instrumental, very dubby.
Mm.
And we used to play that Hacienda, so I thought, let's try that. And it was in my key. But to sing one of the greatest pop records ever by one of the greatest bands ever. I'm a massive Clash fan. With a 70-piece orchestra and the string section, such a buzz. So,
do you see that? When I went, I didn't see the first Bridgewater Hall gig, but about a month after you did it again and you got the sound improved, and that was from the second it started, it was just euphoric. It was like the Hacienda at its peak to me.
Yeah.
Do you see that from the stage now? Do you still see that with the Hacienda Classical? Do you still get the vibe as you did back in the 80s, looking down on the Hacienda dance floor from that DJ booth?
No, absolutely. Now, it varies. It depends on the venue. So, for example, the three Castlefield Arena shows and the Bridgewater Hall shows, the euphoria from the audience, from the Manchester audience, has just been spectacular. And it affects everyone on stage. So straight away, you Mike and I are pacing up and down on our e-cigs backstage, getting really nervous. And then we go on and it's really euphoric and we do it. But even the Royal Albert Hall, because there's a lot of like former Hacienda heads who live in London. Mm. So the Royal Albert Hall was incredible. We opened Glastonbury last year, the Pyramid Stage, 55,000 people. You feed off that energy. Some of the gigs, maybe the audience aren't immediately so euphoric, but then they get there. A lot of the Southern gigs, for example, you know what the softy Southerners are like. But by 15, 20 minutes in, by the fourth or fifth song, then they got, and then it kind of has an effect on you.
Yeah.
But it's a phenomenal. We never thought it would last 3 years, and here we are. I'm already planning next year's show.
Yeah.
We're confirmed for Castlefield Arena. Don't ask me the dates because that's embargoed for now. But
right. We're
back at Castlefield Arena.
Brilliant.
We're back at the Royal Albert Hall next year. And a couple of big festivals as well, but I can't tell you which ones.
Right. And the Manchester thing, it's almost like 70% of the vibe of Hacienda Classical is the Manchester vibe.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what is it about this spirit of this city? You know, regardless of music, what is it about the people, the geography, what makes it so special in terms of, you know, another city in the world? Manchester is the place.
Well, I've got a few answers here. I think it's a northern thing, right? There's a very much a vibe and spirit in the north that doesn't exist elsewhere in the country. And I think as a Scotsman, which is a different type of north altogether, I think I can say that because I come from a very proud country, but I see in Manchester that same kind of spirit that a nationalist Scots person would have. There's a very kind of Manchester kind of angst that's always stood out in its music. I mean, when I was younger and a massive... worked in a record shop, anything on Factory Records, I would get really excited about. Even Crispy Bloody Ambulance, you know, Durruti Column. And Tony Wilson, his famous quote, which, I mean, some people say, oh, we've heard that quote, but I'm going to say it again because it's so important. When Tony Wilson said, "This is Manchester, we do things differently." Mm-hmm. I'm not a Manc, but that's a quote that I regularly come out with. And that's what we did with Hacienda Classical. Mike and I thought, if we want to keep our original fans happy, we need to do it differently. And that's why we came up with Hacienda Classical. And the support has been phenomenal. The love has been phenomenal, especially in Manchester. But one thing that people forget is that the music in the show, 95% of it was never, ever performed live by the original artists. It was all made in studios in Chicago, in Detroit, or in Manchester, or yep. London, or whatever, and just released on a record. Maybe a singer would mime to it on Top of the Pops yep. or do a live PA in a club to the instrumental version, but never recorded, never performed live. Marshall Jefferson, when he saw us doing three of his songs in the first year, he said there was tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
But Marshall Jefferson, Chicago house music legend, he lives in Manchester. That's just mad, isn't it?
I've never met him yet, but I know he's here.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
We've got Alexander O'Neill as well, living across the river here.
Exactly.
Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Manchester, isn't it? Okay. Let's talk about this new project that you're... it's very early days. It's a TV or film
documentary. Yeah, music documentary.
And it's about people like us getting old and still going out there, doing the raving, doing the party, making people dance, not letting age get in the way. That's the theme of it. It's called Embrace the New. What inspired that?
Well, people like yourself, because you're one of our contributors, and thank you again for being part of it. Basically, I've got a friend of mine called Glenn Hanstock, who's an award-winning filmmaker, and we've got a lot in common. We lecture together in my other job as a senior lecturer. We lecture together and we've thrown ideas around for a documentary. We couldn't, his ideas were all like, nah, Glenn, I've done so many interviews and they've never come out, no. And he was the same with my ideas. He's like, no, that's not got legs. And then last spring, I got asked to DJ the 100 Club with Black Grape. And I said yes, because, God, the 100 Club, legendary venue, Sex Pistols, Rolling Stones, you know, lots of jazz legends. So I just wasn't bothered about Black Grape. I just wanted to DJ at the 100 Club. Thought, kind of expected Black Grape were going to be doing their hits or their back catalogue. But no, there was Sean Ryder on stage, the clean Sean Ryder, with Black Grape playing new material, their new album, their last album. And the band were tight as anything. And Sean... he's different with Black Grape than he is with Happy Mondays. His energy, his enthusiasm, and the way he worked the crowd. And I'm like gobsmacked going, oh my God. And I told Glenn Hanstock about this. And he said, that's the documentary. Because he said, you doing Hacienda Classical, Sean with Black Grape, Noel Gallagher's last album, Johnny Marr's material. And I went, I know all these people.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, right, let's try and make it. So I... with yourself and everyone else I mentioned, Rowetta, Peter Hook, Melanie Williams, Jane Casey from Liverpool, used to be in Pink Military.
Yeah.
Just contact them all. Do you want to be in our documentary? I'm very lucky. And I'm sure you get this as well. Whatever you want, Parky, I'll help you out.
Mm.
We're going to hopefully get Noel Gallagher's agreed to be in it. We're talking to Roisin Murphy, Nana Cherry, Boy George. Basically, the concept is older creatives who are... rather than just rely on their back catalogue, are continuing to move forward just to keep, you know, the spirit of youth and energy and moving forward alive. And it's really, really an exciting project. And thank you for supporting us and for being part of our launch. We really appreciate it. But it's like you, what you're doing here on the radio and still playing amazing club gigs. There's no need to hang up your headphones or hang up your guitar or hang up your creativity when you get to your 40s. You know, push forward. And I think our generation, I firmly believe, we're the first kind of generation that's refused to grow up.
Yeah, totally.
We keep the faith. We keep going.
And it's like I said to you last night, we're the generation that never stopped going out as well.
Exactly.
You know, particularly that Manc fraternity that used to go to the Hacienda, still out on the town every night.
Yeah, but you don't, I mean, we had this discussion, don't you find that I do a lot of gigs now where the age range of the audience is from 19 to late 50s or even older, and everyone just gets on. When I started DJing in the early 80s, if you saw anyone over 40 in a nightclub, they just stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Now, It's like, yes, but there's lots of them.
I still do South Nightclub every Saturday night, nearly 18 years. And one of the things I absolutely love about it, and it's quite unique, I think, is that people that have been coming there for 18 years are now bringing their kids to meet me. You know, the first drink with the dad at 18 years old, come and see Clint.
Exactly.
Clint, this is my daughter, this is my son.
I get that.
And then the other way around is youngsters who've discovered the club, bringing their mums and dads to the club to see me, to meet me. That's like I said, back in the day, that was unheard of, wasn't it? If you were over 30 in a club, people would be pointing at you.
No, exactly. You know, one thing on that parent thing, in my other job as a senior lecturer, creative media technology that I do, which is like TV, radio, music production, etc., self-employment in the creative industries. A lot of the students in that, you know, late teens, early 20s, when I do my introductory lecture, this is who I am, this is what I've done, most of them are like, yeah, whatever. But then within the next 2 or 3 weeks, they'll turn up to lectures going, Graham, can I have a word? My mum can't believe that you're my lecturer.
Brilliant.
I'm like, ah. Oh. And she sent me the CD, can you sign it? Which I think is quite fun.
Yeah.
If
I was to ask you, who are your favourite ever humans of Manchester, past or present, who would they be? Just give us 3 or 4 names.
I would definitely say Tony Wilson, without a question. Such an inspirational figure. Someone who just always supported everyone around him and encourage you to just do your thing. I mean, he never interfered with what Mike and I were doing. And as much as a miserable mank that he is, I'd say Mike Pickering, who's been a really good friend since I met him in 87, through the highs and through the lows of our various careers and our paths crossing and stuff. And I can imagine it's quite a controversial one. Peter Hook has become, certainly since Hacienda closed, a very good friend. And working with him on the Hacienda Classical has been just an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And again, he's a lovely, lovely man, despite what some people might say about him.
It's funny because these are people who I know them well, and it's with Uki, with Manny, with Bonehead, with Liam Gallagher to some extent as well. They're still exactly the same people that were before the fame arrived.
You as well, you've always been Clint to me. Noel Gallagher's 50th birthday party. I mean, he's just Noel, isn't he? He's just Noel. He used to come to Hacienda with his daft brother. And it's just, you know, I'm very proud to call these people friends. You know?
Yeah. Last question, Mr. Park. Describe Manchester in 3 words.
Oh, wow. Proud, beautiful, and inspiring.
Beautiful.
That's the city to me.
Graham Park, thank you for being a human of excess Manchester.
Thanks for having me.
That was Graham Park. Make sure you join us next week, where I'll be speaking to Mancunian historian and genealogist, Michaela Hume. Don't forget to follow us on social media and subscribe to Humans of Excess Manchester. Rate us. Feel free to leave us a comment. We love hearing your feedback. And please share the podcast if you enjoy it. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.